Welcome to the Kofkin Bond & Co. podcast. In this episode, we speak to Robert Krustich, Managing Director at Sharper Facility Services. Robert graduated with a Bachelor of Graphic Design Honours from Swinburne University. He began his graphic design and advertising career at marketing communications giant Clemenger Group before starting a cleaning company in 2004. During his time in this advertising industry, Robert became passionate about branding, mainly how products are presented. Robert quickly realized the impact cleanliness had on products and brand presentation and built the business around this viewpoint. Robert's key driver is to align Sharper with clients and brands that share the same belief, thereby making the cleaning experience more of a marketing investment than a low value added cost.
Robert, welcome to the Kofkin Bond podcast. I know you had a big deep breath there before. You are an avid podcast listener, and you and I were connected through a group that we're both in called Cub, and we hit it off really well. We both tend to like cars and talk really well with each other, and we're off to have steak and potatoes tomorrow, a staple diet for both of us as well. So welcome to our podcast as a podcast guest. Now, I've invited you here today because as part of that core group that we're both part of, everyone was mesmerized by your introduction and what you did. So it's you do ask a lot of questions, which is actually wonderful, but today I'm asking you the questions. And you are a very expressive person, but your success and what you've been able to build has actually been, I believe, quite exceptional.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So, but can we start before we go into Sharper Facility Services, which is your business today, which you've built to be a magnificent business. But can we go back and see how did that start? Because your background was actually with Clemenger's, which is advertising, branding, and a whole range of, and Sharper Facility Services is upmarket cleaning services. So how did you start in that sort of white-collar, very big branding and advertising type of business and go to cleaning? Where did that happen? Where's that epiphany?
The epiphany came when my wife and I were on our honeymoon in Mykonos. And rewinding, I got into the advertising industry as a byproduct of having graduated as a graphic designer with honours from Swinburne University and having a thorough knowledge of the printing and production process. I ended up working as a graphic artist for the Clemenger Group, producing the billboards that you see on the freeway and magazine ads and that sort of thing. And knowing the whole time that I was at uni that this is not what I wanted to do, but it was something that I enjoyed but wasn't really driven to do and had no idea what the next step would be. So I get married. We're in Mykonos.
How old at this stage?
24
okay.
years old.
Yep.
And, oh, no, so we got married. I was around 27
yeah.
and we were away, and I hear a guy with an Aussie accent at the main bus terminus near the port there, and we start talking because you hear an Aussie accent when you're on the other side of the world. It's quite an endearing sound, and it's something that you're quite drawn to. What do you do? What do I do? And he tells me that he has a commercial cleaning company on the Gold Coast. And my first thought was, well, how are you on the other side of the world when you've got this business that's effectively running if you're not there? And he said, well, I've got an operations manager that manages the contracts, and I'm the one that does the deals. I'm the sales guy within my own company, and I've got a cleaning team that do the work, and I've got another individual that manages them. And that it struck me immediately, because my exposure to business growing up as a child was a father who had his own business but never expanded beyond himself. So he effectively owned a job, for lack of a better term. He was never home. When he was home, he was resting. He was very good at what he did, but the net effect of that was that he was not around as much as he wanted to be. And my brother and I were effectively raised by my mum, who was the one that was at home and doing the best she could. when we went away on a holiday and he closed the door, there was no income. So my exposure to business was tired, stressed out. This is nothing I ever want to do in my life. So to have this conversation with this individual telling me that there was another option, the light went off pretty much at that point. And it wasn't long after that I then looked at my then wife and I said, you know what, I think this is something that I can do and that I want to do. And it was unflinching. She said, go for it. So we come back. I then go to the accounts department at the office that I work in, which is a very big, beautiful building.
And St Kilda Road there?
No, it was the one off Church Street, Richmond, okay. 658 Church Street.
Yep.
And I asked the accounts department what they got charged for cleaning. There was a wonderful older Greek couple that would come in and do the work, and they were on site for a combined amount of 8 hours a night. I asked them what they got paid per hour and realised very quickly that there was a difference in terms of the cost of labour versus what the company actually charged them. And about 2 weeks later, I resigned and I started. So I think in a way, naivety really worked as an advantage because I didn't go into it thinking, well, if this doesn't work, I can always fall back on what I did, because I didn't want to go back to that.
Yeah.
When you also then couple that with the fact that I think back then you were just able to start sending text messages on mobile phones. Okay. So there was no social media. The little Nokias.
Yeah.
Those were the avant-garde phone of the time.
Have to press the 04 times before it gets fed.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. So there was no Facebook, no Instagram, no TikTok, nothing of the sort that was a way to build a marketing arm. So my pitch at the time was, are you happy with your current cleaners? And that was me putting on a suit and door knocking both sides of Church Street in Richmond on day one as a business owner, having no income. So effectively, my wife supported us for the first 6 months because she worked for Chanel at the time as a makeup artist. And I learned very quickly that revenue is something that is quite an interesting thing to start to generate when you're doing it effectively from a standing start in an industry that you know nothing about. So I then went about slowly building up small clientele where there were 200 or 300 square meter offices that where I was cleaning myself at night. So I was
an office similar to this size.
Pretty much.
Yeah. So I think we're about 380 or something.
Yeah. And even smaller. So yeah. It was that we picked up a furniture showroom, which we ended up having and retaining as a client for 14 years. But I was actually doing the work myself. So I started to look at time and motion.
How did you go from graphic design on computers,
yep,
to a mop and, you know, and actually that mindset switch, that change? How did that come about?
Well, I think the thing that was an advantage was
I was looking for.
Yeah, well, our marketing was great because I was able to leverage my skills as a graphic designer and inadvertently create a perception that the business, despite it being a startup, was an established company because the business card, the company profile and the website all tied in. There was a level of consistency. And I believe from a branding perspective, it looked like we were an established company. So that's the way we were perceived in the market as well. They didn't realize that when they were talking to me as the business owner, that I was also the cleaner.
Mm.
That experience also taught me how to do the job. But to answer your question, I don't really recall there being a mindset shift. I was actually really excited at the fact that I wasn't sitting behind a desk doing graphic artwork anymore. I was actually up and about. I was doing a bit of that. But for the most part, I was actually talking to people. I was interacting. And then at night, I was actually getting to work. So it was something that I was really excited to do.
So were you still doing the graphic design at this stage or not? No, you quit. So
there was no having a side hustle. My side hustle just became the hustle. It was just the thing I did. And
so you make a side hustle work when you have no other option.
Totally agree. And I think also the timing of being newly married, having relatively low overheads, not having children or anything like that. There were a number of factors that I think worked in our favour. And I think I'll always point back to the naivety. I just did it and didn't think about market conditions being right. There was no business plan. There was really no planning at all. I drove out to Camberwell, and there was a cleaning service, cleaning supply company out there called Melbourne Cleaning Supplies, which we still use to this day. They gave me the kit, which I put into the back of my Honda Civic, and that was effectively my mobile office. So I was bringing the equipment on and off site. I didn't have enough capital to actually keep equipment on site because I couldn't afford it, and just started to grow the business that way. But then very quickly ended up in a scenario that my dad found himself in his whole career, where I basically maxed out the amount of hours I could work at night, and I was now owning a job, because it was getting to the point where I thought, well, I can't bring on any more work because I can't fulfill it myself. And I was getting tired. I was doing 12 to 14 hours of cleaning a night.
Wow, okay.
Sleeping very little, doing that 6 nights a week. So I started to lump a lot of the once a week cleans were done over the weekend, because it gave me a little bit of breathing space. And it was my wife.
So at this stage, you certainly weren't at the level that the Gold Coast gentleman was.
No. No, definitely not. But what I wanted to know was, I wanted to understand the process. I wanted to understand the best way and the most efficient way to clean an office, and understand it very well. So then when I started to hire people, that they could then replicate the standard that I'd set. Because oddly enough, when I was cleaning, I was getting no complaints. My challenges as a business owner started to occur when I started to hire people. And I had no knowledge about human resources. I had really very little knowledge about understanding whether a person has the skill set or not. So then it was really a case of replicating me was actually ghosting them and – sorry, not ghosting them, shadowing them and following them around and explaining, this is the way I expect you to do it, and getting them to realize, oh, wow, yeah, that's actually a really, really good and efficient way of cleaning. So the business started to grow in that respect. My wife – then said, okay, well, there's some money that I've got saved. We'll live off that, but I need you to now go and push and grow the business. So having that support really was something that gave me the strength and ability to build on confidence as we then went on. And as time progressed, the business then started to grow.
Robert, you are known in the industry as, you know, you do prestige. You do a job and you do it extremely well. And how do you then train, you know, employee 001 to do that? And then, you know, the scalability side of it, so that when you're now at employee, now you're far beyond this now, but you're employee 10, that employee 10 is either getting trained by employee 1 or you. How do you actually start that scalability of ensuring that they're not letting down your name? Because when somebody has come in, and we've had this issue, you know, we're a small office compared to, you know, we're not the Sheraton or anything like that, but it's, but we've had good experience, and then the company we've used has replaced the cleaners, and then have they even been in? Mm. You know, you don't even know if they've actually been in, you know, things like that. So how do you get them to understand and replicate the pride you actually take in doing that job and doing it at such an, you know, a wonderful level that clients say, wow, this is different?
Question. And it's something that is still a challenge today. It's really getting the people at the ground level to embody what we know and live and breathe at head office level, because ultimately they do represent us. So we developed and filmed our own training videos, which I was a star of. And cleaners get given those videos. They also then get inducted
in. Does that come back to your graphic design type of background, a thought process around advertising and things like that as well? Is that where? Yeah. Because, I mean, you now have training, well, apps and that will do that and help with that. But back then, that would have nearly been VHS recording, pretty much, or digital recording. Yeah.
So it was a way of me trying to replicate my knowledge by either having a written policy, which in some cases English isn't the first language for many of our workers. So that becomes pretty redundant pretty quickly. I'm a big believer that if I see it, I'll understand. So it's really about demonstrating, and then having a management structure such that we have operations, senior area managers and then area managers beneath that, and then really investing and having new cleaners that have come into the industry that have no experience, working on a current site where they are learning from existing staff. Now, that's something that we bear the cost of that. And I think that really becomes the difference. It's not a case of, well, there's your vacuum cleaner, there's your mop and bucket, there are the keys, go. That will not work and it will not be sustainable long term, because one of the things we find our clients really like is they want to see the same face in their building, particularly in a commercial sense. When you leave your office at night, the only other person that really has full access to your premises is the cleaner.
Mm.
You want to make absolutely sure that that individual is the same individual for a very, very long period of time. And if a change does occur that's not quality related, that you're also then happy with the new person that's on site. So that's really a level that, and all I'm doing is I'm looking at it from the client's point of view. Whenever I talk to a prospective client, I'm not there selling. I'm there trying to find out where their pain points are and whether or not we are in a position to fulfill and solve their problem. Because if their problem is, well, we just want it cheaper, then that immediately says to me they don't really look at cleaning as an investment. They're looking at it as a cost.
Mm.
A cost like putting petrol in your car. Now, you can go for the low octane stuff because it's a few cents a litre cheaper, or you can, if you've got a performance vehicle, you need to put the best in the car to ensure its performance. And I think when you then look at cleaning as an investment, and you might say, well, how is that an investment? Well, it's how your staff feel when they walk into the kitchen and the kitchen table doesn't have streaks on it and it doesn't have crumbs on it. The restrooms don't smell. Their desk has been hygienically cleaned. There's no finger marks on the glass. These are the things that, whether we're aware of it or not, we're all looking at. And we're making judgments based on what we see, whether it's at a conscious or an unconscious level. If it's at a conscious level and you're a potential buyer of a vehicle in a motor showroom, then that lack of cleanliness then can have an effect on sales and the bottom line.
It does, Aline. Some of the, you know, you walk into any Zagami showroom, you know, they you walk in there and you think, okay, this is, well, you don't even think about it because you just walk in and
you feel it.
Yeah, you do. And, you know, if you're going to drop $500,000 on a car, they, from that perspective, you know, you are walking into a glamorous place. And, you know, from the people who come to you, they're dressed beautifully. The showroom is beautiful. You know, so it is interesting when you say that, because there are things, you know, in hotels. You walk into a hotel and you expect to, you know, I've always said a dream of mine would be to actually be able to go to bed every night and there's clean sheets on the bed.
Mm.
And my wife said that's why you spend a week and month up in the Sydney office when you stay in hotels. but it is that, you know, that unique experience that you walk in there and you just feel comfortable. It's nice. It's not over the top where you might feel intimidated, but it's just beautiful. Yeah, so the cars are in pristine condition and where they're shown is in pristine condition as well.
Absolutely. And to further that point, cleaning operates on an interesting metric in that it's noticed when it's not done well.
Yes, yeah.
So we're in the space of invisibility. We're producing something that you may not even necessarily overtly go, wow, this place is spotless. But your experience will lend itself to a positive one. And the one, but then again, we have clients that actually know, they notice and they tell us and they acknowledge us when the job's done right, which has so much value to our cleaners when they get told, hey, guess what? We got a really lengthy email from the head facility manager at one of our key clients, and they were just raving on about the little things that our day cleaner does to make the life of their staff easy. They're the relationships you want. They're the ones that stand the test of time, and they're the ones that create that level of loyalty. Now, ultimately, that loyalty will only last as long as we fulfill our end of the bargain, but they're the relationships that we chase. It just turns out that we have got a number of very well-recognized global brands as clients of ours, but it doesn't mean that any business that values what we can provide can't potentially be someone that we want to work with. And that ultimately is where we find the marriage.
Robert, can I circle back? You were speaking about your parents earlier, and were your parents migrants here to Australia? Yeah. When did they come?
1974.
Okay, so my parents were here in 66, and one of the things that I found, and I went to school at St. Bernard's in Essendon, and St. Bernard's in Essendon, there were I would suggest 60 to 70% of the students there were first generation children from migrants. And I found when migrants came here to Australia, especially if English wasn't their first language, they worked hard. They worked hard. And yes, there was a racism and everything else that actually has occurred, and it occurs all around the world, and I'm not trying to downplay it. But I remember my mum saying to me, my mum's Irish and dad has an Eastern European background, but he was raised in London. And she made the comment that, because we, in growing up in Moonee Ponds, there was a lot of Italians and a lot of Greeks as well. And she said, the advantage that we've actually had in coming here as migrants is we might have an accent, but English was our first language. Mm-hmm. As if you have a look at the Pizzinelli family down the road, in Grandison Street, Moonee Ponds as well, or Tony Pizzinelli, the hardest worker you ever see, self-employed in concreting. The Pizzinelli's motto, as we came, we saw, we concreted. And you always knew every new house they bought in Grandison Street because the front lawn was concreted. So at the end, they need a place to put all their cars. But all the family, all five boys and their sister as well, have all been unbelievably successful because they learned this hard slog of a work ethic from their migrant parents. Do you think that, you're seeing your father, worked hard, provided, slept, gave your mum the ability to be able to raise you and your brother, do you think that that has installed that sort of sense of entrepreneurship in you? You saw what you didn't want, because our parents have all, and no differently with your children as well as I have been with mine, our parents always want your children to have it easier than what you've had it at the same time. We don't want to necessarily make them soft, but your parents worked hard to give you and your brother an easier life than what, say, they had, and their parents probably did the same, and you and your wife do that for your children as well. Do you think that gave you that sort of sense of entrepreneurship, but you also saw what you didn't want to occur?
Growing up, running a business was something that I didn't want to do, based on what I saw happening with my own eyes, within my own home. I just did not feel that that was something that was a goal of mine, but I didn't know what that goal actually was. Now, when I think back about myself as a student and as a young person, I was remarkably unremarkable.
Did you have a competitive mindset, though?
Yes, very competitive.
Yeah.
Hated losing. Yeah, and would do anything to win.
I was going to be shocked if you said no, you didn't have a competitive mindset. So.
Competitive mindset, but I was not a standout student.
Yeah.
My grades were not, other than art or English, were anything to really boast about. Athletically, I wasn't overly gifted until I started growing in my much later teens. I then started to develop some decent skills in playing basketball. I started training and I started to fall in love with that sort of thing. But there was nothing about me that you look back and go, oh, yeah, I remember Rob from high school. He was that guy. I wasn't that guy. Mm-hmm. I was just the guy that just blended in. But in terms of entrepreneurship, that was something that came much, much later. And it really happened when I read a book by Michael Gerber called The E-Myth Revisited. So that was really about building replicatable processes within your business and understanding that. So really that was where, and then started to digest information that was of entrepreneurship.
It does sound like, though, it might have been on a subconscious level, but it does sound like you wanted to be in charge of your own destiny.
Yes. And I knew very quickly that working in, particularly in the advertising industry, which is very cutthroat. It's something that I feel is set up in a way where the junior worker gets worked very, very hard. And it's almost like a badge of honor. You've got to go through these particular unpaid hours and do the weekends and all that to then earn your stripes, to then proceed and climb the corporate ladder in that industry. I could see myself in a situation where I had very little predictability over how my day ran.
Yeah.
So I would think to myself when, you know, my wife would ring me, what time are you going to be home? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, probably around 8 o'clock. And then I'd walk in at 9:30 and she's fallen asleep on the couch and my dinner's in the oven. I thought, this is not the life that I see myself having for the long term. So it was really a case of I was looking at something, I was looking for something, but I didn't know what it was. And it wasn't until I looked at, without realizing it at the time, the thing that appealed to me in the industry that I got into was it's scalable if done well. But again, I didn't know that word scale. I just knew that it's something that I could do without my direct physical input every single day. And that was the thing that got me interested. And that's when, you know, you start doing something long enough, you then start to, that interest then starts to become a bit of a passion and you start to get driven by it. It's not like I was passionate about cleaning and got into it because this was the thing I wanted to do. But I am very much driven about giving people and delivering expectations beyond what the individual expects. It's something that I strive to do to this day.
Yeah. And you can see that. And you can see that, you know, I remember my mother saying to me, you will have an education.
Yes.
So you will get out of bed and you will have it, because they never had that.
Oh, absolutely.
And they worked so hard to ensure that my sister and I actually got a good education.
Yeah.
And my father got me heavily involved in sport because I just had too much energy. And, you know, and it was magnificent because it teaches you discipline and you had to get up early in the morning. I still do to this day. But it was actually really interesting because she said, you know what, I don't care what you do when you, this is my mum, I don't care what you do when you finish school, but a couple of things are going to happen. No one with our surname is ever allowed on the dole, number one.
Yes.
And number two, I don't care if you work as a garbo, you will be the most educated garbo. And I think what that did was it was setting you up for an ability to, when you've been taught discipline through, my father was a very quiet man but unbelievably competitive, but when you actually have that competitive streak in you, you're brought up in a disciplined mindset through, not disciplined through, you know, violence, but disciplined through sport, you know, where you, if you're not natural, you have to work hard at it. And then last but not least, having that mindset, whatever you do, you're going to do to your best ability. And I think from that way of having that migrant mindset is it actually sets us up to be entrepreneurs, but it does, I forget what it's called, but it's something mango, the three sort of ethnic
or Sushi Mango.
Sushi Mango. And it was one of their skits where the daughter, one of the daughters, brings home the new date, the boy, and sitting down and the three brothers there sort of sitting there, you know, the older men sitting down. So, Rob, what do you do for a job? I'm an entrepreneur. Oh, so you're unemployed. But it can be that sort of, you know, thought process, but it's, you know, the what you've actually done is you've scaled and built a business. And if we touch on your business, because your business is a success, you go onto your website and you can just say class. The first thing I did after I met you was, you know, when I got your card is I went onto your website and you just saw everything you spoke about when I first met you was identifiable through that website. It really was magnificent. It was interactive. It was, you could see the class. You could see that if you're going to engage your services, that's what you would expect. But when you actually got that, you've now built this business up. You've got global brands as clients, gone from knocking on doors and doing the work yourself to now actually having global brands, and you've got about 300 people now working for you.
Yes.
Now from that perspective, was that a dream of yours when you started, or has that just been something that has eventuated because every day you've just gone and worked at it to get to that level?
No, it definitely was a dream.
Yeah.
One of the things that
a dream that became a vision that became reality through action. Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I enjoyed when in the first sort of few months and years was the ability to take a morning and go and grab a bite to eat with my wife as the business owner when we had half a dozen cleaners working for us. I started to see that the most valuable commodity is time. And being out at a cafe at Albert Park Lake, I remember vividly looking over my shoulder saying, one day, babe, we're going to point at the cityscape and we're going to be able to go, we've got that building, that building, that building, which we now do when we're driving somewhere. I'm often just saying, that's a client of ours. And like, really?
Kids, that building is a client of mine.
but also, but it's done in a way where what I want them to do is when we drive past is to say thank you.
Mm.
Because it's the trust that the people that are in that building or run that building or own that building have given to us to service their premises that has enabled me to employ the people that I do, to give us the life that we've got. So this is very much an expression of gratitude rather than, hey, hey, look at how good I am. And it's also really a reminder of where I have personally come from and where the business has started from, and never forgetting what it's taken to get to where we are today. So that's really, yeah, it was definitely a vision, and it was something that I knew would happen. And then there was that period of frustration where we were coming well and truly out of that startup phase, having larger opportunities, getting shortlisted, and then having the prospective client say, well, what other buildings of a similar size do you service? And the answer was, well, we don't. You guys would be like, I needed someone to give us a go once, to go, you know what, Rob, I believe in what you've said and I know you're going to deliver.
Give me a shot at the title.
Yes. Yes. And we got that at one point, and it was when we got that, that the game, not only for me personally changed, but the game in the market changed, because now it's like we have an asset that we can hang our hat on and be really, really proud of. And it's, you know, a building of prominence that most people would know if they see it in the CBD, and then working off that. And that's something that I actually reached out to this particular individual to thank them, because to this day, it's something that I remember. And that's that moment when you turn back and realize that was a turning point.
Somebody gave you a chance and you just certainly did not let them down.
No, we still have to this day.
Yeah, which is well, that's the testament to the work that you've actually done.
Yes.
You know, from that perspective.
And that's someone that has really, really high standards. So happy to give a shout out to Mr. Vince Giuliano of PDG Group.
Yep.
He gave us a chance. Huge
company,
PDG. Massive company.
Yep. Property lawyer actually looks after them too, interestingly enough.
And just exceptionally well run. Many, many members of the Saint family within the business, but someone that really was taking a risk on us. Let's not mince words, to pick up a 57-story apartment tower in the middle of the city when you've never done a building remotely as close to that, says a lot about Vince as a person and the belief that he had in us, but then it was incumbent upon us. But I remembered coming back into the office when I got told we'd won it. And I looked at my operations guys, and one of them looked at me and he said, Rob, I'll make it work. And I just knew. And we deployed extra people, extra hours to learn and understand how a building of that size operates. And we were then able to build processes off that building to then deploy. This is now in the owner's corporation space. So we're cleaning common property within very beautiful apartment buildings, and taking a real hotel/concierge approach to how we deliver our service, the uniforms that our cleaners wear, how the cleaners' trolleys are presented. Because ultimately, we're cleaning services, but the cleaners' trolleys and the equipment we use also must be pristine.
Absolutely.
Our cleaners' room must be pristine. The uniforms must be clean. Everything about the language and how we conduct ourselves has to be congruent. Because if I've got a beautiful glossy web company profile or a website that you've kindly referred to on a number of occasions, but the cleaner has BO or isn't well groomed, or the mop water stinks because it hasn't been cleaned properly, or whatever it is, these are all the things that if there's anything that doesn't speak the same language, that to me is unacceptable.
These are the 1%ers that actually make people so successful. The greatest athletes on earth do all the 1%ers. Now, I made a comment the other day about Jason Dunstall, who I'm an Essendon fan, but obviously one of the greatest full forwards, great Hawthorn man. But every single day he went and had 100 shots at goal from all different angles, and he was one of the most accurate kicks of all time outside of training. And at one stage, he actually had to hide it because they were a bit concerned he would injure himself. But he had so many shots at goal that didn't matter where he marked the ball, he knew statistically his chances of getting that because of the amount of shots that he had at goal. All he had to do was get the ball within 50 metres. That was his skill set. But it's all these unbelievable one percenters that people don't think of. But it's, you know, you said that, you know, for example, that if somebody isn't clean themselves, but they're your cleaner, you know, what are they going to bring? And it's, I think that is tremendous. And it's a real testament to who you are because you're always, you know, meticulously groomed as well. So it's, you are. So it's, and obviously your kids think so. So was it your daughter? Or one of them said to you the other day, when I get older, I want to shave my head like Dad. I want to shave my head like Dad.
Yeah.
You know, so and it's just like that is a boy who looks up to his dad.
And that to me is the greatest success, because going back to my childhood, the one thing that I also was very keen to create was an ability to be present in the lives of my kids when we had them.
And you speak so glowingly and openly about your family too, which is beautiful to hear.
Well, they're everything. But there are things that also come at a cost, because I could probably have a bigger company if I chose to work 60 hours a week, but I choose not to because there are people that I'm wanting to give myself to and be present for morning and night. So that has been the big driver for me, is to actually also create a scenario where I'm a hands-on and active and present father. And to do that in a way where when I'm there, I have and giving them my undivided attention. It's not I'm taking a call or I'm doing – I segregate what I'm doing and I'm doing the thing while I'm doing it. And I think they've recognized that, and they've just seen that as, well, that's just the way Dad is, and also appreciate that not all families get that luxury.
So they have a sporting event on, you're there.
All the time.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things I've always said to all my colleagues in here. If I ever hear that you have children or it's got a sporting event on and you're here at work, I'll be very disappointed.
Interesting you say that, because I have a very, very similar mindset within our head office as well. Mm. Family is incredibly important, and I don't want to see one of the mums at work, if I hear that one of their kids are unwell, it's like, what are you even doing here? Just go home, take care of them, because I know that when they're working, they're giving 100%.
Yeah.
So why can't I do the same in return?
Rob, I'm going to close on this, if it's okay, because I've really, really thoroughly enjoyed this talk, and I think all our listeners will as well. But on a podcast, one of our earliest podcasts, was actually Jamie interviewing me. I've said the life of a CEO who's founded a business and is growing a business can actually be very lonely. I mean, I'm quite lucky in this industry because, you know, there was a group of five of the, including ourselves, with some of the top practices in the country, all got together yesterday. Jordan came with us as well and actually just spoke about all of our pain points, you know, and things like that, and areas where we're actually learning from each other. One of the things is, though, is the life of the CEO can be quite lonely, which is like groups like Cub are fantastic for, because we get to be surrounded by so many other people who are growing a business or have unbelievably successful businesses and all learn off each other and become friends out of that as well. But one of the things that you've actually done, which I love because it's something that I zealously guard as well, is your family. You've, right from the moment I've met you, you've spoken so openly and so glowingly of your family. In actual fact, I've never heard a negative word come out of your mouth, to put it bluntly. So it's you're always extremely positive in everything you say. But you, the idea of working to give them a good life. But, you know, you've got commitments, you know, so everyone has commitments. You live in a nice suburb. The kids go to private schools. And a lot of people, I think, sometimes see Rob and, sorry, what was your wife's name?
Danny.
So they can see yourself and Danny and say, isn't life so good for them?
Mm.
But they don't see Rob working the 14 hours at night in that pristine uniform doing the cleaning himself. They just see your life today of having a lovely lifestyle, kids in private schools, and that's what they see and say, how lucky are they?
Yeah.
but they don't see all the hard work that has actually got you to you and Danny to that stage, and having Danny as your greatest supporter, in other words, you know, allows you to be able to work to the ethic that you actually have as well. And I'm sure she's had a lot to do with that too, and your children. So, but you're also another person who physically takes very good care of yourself. So you obviously ensure that it's not just about working hard, being wealthy, dying young. Basically, yeah, it's a case of, and your life is your children, etc. So how do you work around, it's a very long segue into this last question for you, but how do you work around every aspect of your life, your mental health, your physical health, which is exceptional, your family life, making sure that's there. There's 24 hours in a day. You've also got 300 people that you are responsible for as well. So how do you structure your day to ensure that every part of your day is you're getting the best, your people getting the best out of you, and you're getting the best out of you as well?
Oh, thank you for the observations and great question. I think when something becomes enough of a priority for you, you will find the time to make it work. So when it comes to my training, it's something that I am very interested in and constantly wanting to improve.
It looks like you committed to it.
Committed to?
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things that I don't have time to do. I don't watch a lot of TV. I don't really have a lot of time where I'm sitting down doing nothing. And that's based because I don't want to do it. But my training particularly is, I look at it as a part-time job. It's a non-negotiable. I train four, sometimes five times a week. When I'm there, I'm doing the job. I'm not on my phone in between sets. I'm not nothing. None of that. No, there's not that. I'm not even touch. I don't touch the phone.
Yeah.
You see a lot of people scrolling where even then, even at the time when they should be dedicating and focusing on, is my breathing at the right amount? Am I pushing hard on my working sets? Am I giving 100%? Am I well rested enough? Have I got my food in, all of my nutrition and food prep done? There's a whole lot of organizing, and there's a lot of other things that I could be doing with my time. I just choose to use it in a very specific way that's going to give me the best results and outcome for me. Because interestingly, the training isn't just about the training. The discipline that comes along with that spills out into every other part of my life. So when I'm sitting here having this opportunity to talk to you, I know that I've got a cooler box in my car with a pre-prepared meal. Yes, I'm going to eat it cold, but I don't care. But not missing a meal is something that's important to me, but I can't do that on the fly. I'm thinking about that the night before. Mm-hmm. And I also know that I've got food at work when I get to work later today, and that all of these things and all the thinking around organizing that are really how it works. And ultimately, I think it was Confucius that says, if you haven't got enough time, it's not important enough to you. It's something along those lines, right? So whenever you hear someone say, well, I can't do that, it's like, okay, well, that's just not enough of a priority for you.
Yeah.
Maybe at some point in the future it will be, and then you just build your life around that. So we all start off at the beginning of the day with the same 24 hours, but we end the day very, very differently. It's how we choose to invest that time that really will determine whether we get to whatever goals we set. It's not even about having goals, because I have no goals. I have no goals in my business, and I have no goals personally, because there's no finish line. It's every day is day one, and I just live my life that way.
It was funny. I said to one of my partners in here, Jamie, who I think you met briefly at the last club meeting. He's coming to lunch with us tomorrow, by the way. He really wants to meet you. I've spoken highly of you. And he said, oh, no, I don't have goals. I said, rubbish. I said, you told me you wanted to move with your family down to Torquay. You've done it. You told me that you just wanted to start a family. You've now got an early one-year-old. So you actually do have goals, but it's not necessarily written down, has to be achieved by this day.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that I said to him is, we're going to have a 120-month business plan. And he said, 120 months? I said, well, it's 10 years. Yes. Yeah, so, and he said, well, how's that work? And I said, well, every month it starts again.
Yeah, nice.
So we're breaking it down into monthly chunks, and every single month the 120 months starts again, the 120 months starts again. So it's yeah, we've got the long vision, but every single month we're breaking down into that. So I would probably think that that's something you just do anyway.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's you don't think about going to the gym, you go to the gym.
Yeah, and so it's, out of the five or four times that I go, I was actually having this conversation with my son. I said, mate, how many out of those days that I train do I actually want to go? And he goes, well, all the time. I said, no. Three out of the four, there are four or five reasons that I could pick very quickly to not do it.
Yeah.
But I do it anyway.
Yeah.
But what has never happened is I've never gotten there and thought, oh, I shouldn't have come today. Once you're there and you're doing it, you're very glad that you did it.
You never finish any type of workout and regret it.
No.
Because the endorphin rush and the feeling of actually achievement is wonderful.
And also, I think senior to that, it's the promise that you make to yourself. Because ultimately, if I've got my gym bag in the car and I don't go, no one knows, but I know.
Yeah.
So I'm just holding myself to a level of accountability that I believe is high. And interestingly, I don't have to preach to my kids because they see it. It's something that they are just observing naturally by virtue of living in the same household. And it is now spilling out where they're becoming quite interested. So there's no sitting down and having a lecture going, now, son, you must do this. Or to my daughter, Zara, doing the same sort of thing. They are just capturing it by the way we conduct ourselves as people.
Yeah. Rob, it's a beautiful way to finish this. I love the fact that you're so family oriented. I was speaking to you earlier before we went on air about a client, Wayne Walsh from Premier Air, and Wayne is very much the same. You know, so he certainly did not come from any privileged upbringing, and he shares his whole story. Loves his sport, he's very successful. Loves his family more than anything on earth, and everything that he does is exactly what you spoke about as well. It's, you know, his family, his children are now adults, their grandparents, Michelle, and basically it's a case of that, you know, their children are involved in the business, they're adults in their own as well, and everything that he has done has been about family. But he is a great runner, did lots of running, and then he took up cycling. And then he decided he was going to go to the Tour de France and ride, you know, as you can do with the Tour de France as well. But he brought his family. Wow. You know, so it wasn't just I'm going away for 2.5 weeks and see. He brought his family. Wow. You know, they're all involved. And I see you're doing exactly the same. Family is everything to me as well. So, and yes, I see that in, you know, having done this job for 32 years, the really successful business founders are all about family. And they're the ones that end up successful because emotionally they're very successful as well.
Mm-hmm.
As a result. So congratulations, Rob.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to the next 30 years with yourself anyway.
Thank you.
Looking forward to lunch tomorrow as well, and thank you for coming in.
The Kofkin Bond Podcast is a product from Kofkin Bond & Co., which we are an authorised representative of Cam Financial. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal or tax advice. The hosts of the Kofkin Bond Podcast are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decision, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from the podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Kofkin Bond website, or you can find resources on the ASIC website and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Kofkin Bond and Co. and the host of the Kofkin Bond podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of the country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.